in the census of the village. And Land Claim Settlement Act, they said that they're supposed to give everybody their primary place of residence right after they get the title to the land. Well, since that was, if my family was not counted in 1970 as one of the village family, it wouldn't have enough people in the village to make it a village. You needed 25 or something like that residents. And my family comprised of one third of the people in the village then. But when the benefit time come along, why I'm excluded from that. Mainly the primary place of residence. If I'm counted, my family is counted to make the village a village, I think I should have been, you know, included in the benefits also.
Yeah, I see your point. I've never heard anything quite like that. You said that the place where your property was built, someone claimed it was private property. That is, well, what happened? Is it private property or?
Yeah, it is. It is private property, and they tried to get me to knock my house down and move it. Well, this was already, the claim settlement back was already passed, and I didn't have any place I could move it. So I had to go to court and claim advise possession. And naturally, we made an out-of-court agreement that I get 5 acres of land there. My house is still there, but then it cost me an awful lot of money to do it. That the lawyer cost.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I confess I've never heard of anything quite like that. Everything else has happened under this act. Well, I can't tell you what the answer may be. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, I think a good idea that there are some of the other villagers that were living in the same house with either the brothers or the fathers or somebody. They're also they got the primary place of the head of the household got primary place of residence. And then they either sold it or something, and the people that were living there don't have no place, don't have any place now. So I think that if the benefit, if the people were counted in 1970, I think every one of those would have, you know, something to live in the village anyway. Everything was turned over to the corporation and. All the people that made the village, I imagine it's going to come up over and over again.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry about my
Good afternoon. My name is Ted Mala, and I would like to address the commission, Commissioner Berger, on some areas of health and education. And for the record, I would like to mention who I am, since there are some people in here who don't know me and I don't know, and would like to mention my background. By background, I am Eskimo and Russian. My family is from Kotzebue, and I, by education, have a bachelor's degree from DePaul University in Chicago. I'm a physician with my medical degree from the Autonomous University of Guadalajara, and I have a master's degree in public health from Harvard University. In my work, I previously have been the served as the Special Assistant for Health Affairs with the Alaska Federation of Natives, and have been the medical director for the Alaska State Division of Corrections. And my current position is that I'm an associate professor of health sciences at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. I work with a number of health and education groups, and am involved with Circumpolar Health and with the Alaska Public Health Association, and work as a, have been most recently appointed as an advisor to the World Health Organization with the Nordic Council, and which I am going to Greenland in April to have a working session on problems of the North, especially of Alaska Natives and alcoholism and mental health. I also work with a number of national organizations, including the Association of American Indian Physicians, and most recently have written a chapter of a book for UNESCO in Paris on the problems of medical, of social and medical types of concerns of Alaska Natives. And I write a weekly column in the Tundra Times on health and social issues. I would like to preface my remarks with the concerns that I have of the Alaska Land Claim Settlement Act as one of the factors of many which have been brought before this commission of the number of problems that have occurred. And I would like to relate the effects of the act not only to the area of health but also to education, since I'm able to walk into kind of both worlds every day. Historically, we know that Alaska Natives have been in relatively good standards of health until the first pre-European contact, and then after that period, there was a double colonization in Alaska of Russians and also Americans between 1741 and 1953. And it was that period in our history that a long series of epidemic diseases were brought into Alaska, which really devastated Alaska Natives because our immune systems weren't ready for those diseases that came. And then the third period was the establishment of the current system of Alaska Native health care, which has, because of the act, organized not only into corporations but into regional nonprofit corporations, which has evolved to this day. We know that earlier, historically in 1741, that the Russian explorers came to Alaska, and following that, there were 200 years of epidemic diseases, which included smallpox and influenza, tuberculosis, measles, whooping cough, diphtheria, and polio. The first tuberculosis death was in the 1700s. And finally, after a long period of time, actually in the early 1950s, tuberculosis epidemic was finally described as an epidemic in Alaska, and it was felt that this epidemic exceeded any other in recorded history. And so finally the public, the federal government came around and established the Native Health Service and the Public Health Service as we know it right now, which was in 1955. But actually, if we look at the health in the past compared to health today, we see that in 1950s, the people were dying from especially tuberculosis, and of course, this really affected people quite a bit, depending on where you were located. And the second cause of death was influenza and pneumonia, third was deliveries, fourth was accidents, and fifth was upper respiratory infection. And today, we find that the number one cause of death in our villages and in among Native people are accidents. The second cause of hospitalization is deliveries today. The third is alcohol abuse. The fourth is complications of pregnancy. And fifth, otitis media. To give a more dramatic...
That last one is an eye thing?
Ear. Otitis media.
So sorry.
And to give you some example of how things have dramatically changed since the beginning of the Indian Health Service records, in 1959, in terms of inpatient, as we call hospitalized Alaska Natives, in the year 1959, there were 6,911 admissions. And this past year, we had 10,595 admissions. With the new baby type of birth rate going up, in 1961, there were 181 admissions for newborn babies. And this past year in Alaska Natives, there were 1,693. And in terms of outpatient workload in Alaska Natives, in 1959, there were close to 66,000 outpatient visits to clinics by Alaska Natives. And this past year, there were 305,610. So the number is certainly going up. We look at questions of circumpolar health, and I am going to cite a paper which I just published last month in Alaska Medicine, which is the journal of the Alaska State Medical Association, asking the question, what is circumpolar health and what it is, what it means for us in Alaska? A lot of the work that we're doing today is taking into account not only the historical perspective, which I believe we can't really begin to make change without taking that into consideration, but looking at all the factors that have brought us to where we are today, and taking it even a step further and looking at how our diseases compare with other people that live in the same circumpolar environment, people that live around the North Pole, and looking at Eskimo or Native people in Siberia, or looking at people in Greenland, or working with the Canadian Eskimo, the Inuit, and the Indians, and so on. And just to see, are our problems uniquely our own, or are they shared by other people and other indigenous peoples, or is it just a result of our own culture, or all the things that we've talked about? And to begin with, of course, we looked at autopsies that were done in Greenland and in Canada and Barrow of people that were found frozen in the ice. And we found that pre-contact autopsies, European contact was brought, we found that the causes of death were basically due to injuries, malnutrition, and famine. There were a number of intestinal parasites, there were eye diseases and arthritis and so on, but there was no evidence actually of cancer. There was no evidence of tuberculosis. There was no evidence of venereal disease. We looked at also the changes that are happening in Alaska Natives and in Canadian Natives today, and especially when Native people begin to go from a traditional lifestyle to a modern lifestyle, going from people that are beginning to adopt Western lifestyles. We know that the Settlement Act was important in not only organizing people and beginning to divide Alaska into regions and corporations and so on, but also it brought with it, as you know well, the radical changes that are prevalent in the dominant non-native society. The big difference is that the rest of the United States, so the lower 48, were gradually introduced to things. Thomas Edison came along, and we had electricity, and then X amount of time, perhaps later, there were telephones, and then people got used to that, and radio came along, and then television came along. And people had a long period of time to begin to adapt to these gradually. Whereas within our own native people, and with all of a sudden all these resources coming to villages and to rural areas, It happened very quickly. And all of a sudden, instead of waiting 10 or 20 or 30 years for things to happen, it happened as quickly as the plane or the barge or the boat could bring things in. So along with this adaptation to Western society and the role models that have been projected either through radio or television or magazines or whatever, we began to look at comparisons between Canadian natives and American natives, Alaskan natives, looking at what has happened with the taking on the Western lifestyle. We have noticed things, for example, that the Inuit stature, the height of the Eskimo people, has decreased 2 centimeters over the past 10 years. And the reason is probably because of snow machines. And people are now using snow machines instead of dog sleds. And what happens when you're in a snow machine? Well, you're bouncing up and down in the back, and your spine is taking this tremendous beating. And actually, people's stature have gone down. We have looked at new diseases that have come.
2 centimeters is how much in inches?
Oh, maybe it would be centimeter. I would say more or less.
Quarter of an inch?
Part of an inch, yeah. Part of an inch, yeah. It perhaps does not seem terribly significant in terms of overall height and growth and so on, but these are actual physical things that are interesting and that are quite measurable. There are other things that, for example, we did a study this 2 years ago. We did a 2-year study statewide of the basis of alcohol and drugs in the state, a baseline study. And we did all the junior high schools, the high schools, and we looked at communities, and we looked at national trends compared to Alaskan trends, and we looked at Barrow and Kotzebue and Nome and Bethel and Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau, and looked at the use and usage of drugs and alcohol, and did comparisons between the city and the rural areas, and were quite surprised in some ways that the drug use wasn't as bad as we thought it would be out in the rural areas, and that, as nationally has been demonstrated, drugs such as cocaine follow the pattern of money. And so as people find more leisure time, we find, and as expendable resources such as money come about, we're finding that there is more leisure time being used with drugs. Not that it's epidemic. We feel that the rate, overall rate between schools and city and rural and so on, are pretty close as a state in general.
Pretty close to each other, or pretty close?
Pretty
to
close
some
to each other. Pretty close to each other. That it's.
And you expected to find what?
We expected to find higher drug use in the villages and in the urban area, the rural areas, because conventional wisdom seemed to say that, oh yes, it's terrible out there, and people would say, well, native people are not trading for dollars anymore, that people are demanding drugs plus dollars. And so what we wanted to do was look at and do a baseline study across the state to see if indeed it was as bad as people had said it is. And we found that our findings were somewhat consistent. What some of our newest findings were, and we were most concerned about, is that in Alaska we're finding 600 to 800 new cases of cancer, and 200 of those cases being found from the northern regions. That's native and non-native.
You mean 600 to 800 per annum, or what?
Per annum, yes. And we are also finding that in Alaska, that lung cancer is, the rate is twice the higher than the rest of the nation, and that non-native rates are quickly catching up with native rates in terms of cancer. And that in Alaska Natives, that renal cancer, kidney cancer, is three times higher than the rest of the nation. And that in Alaska Eskimos and Aleuts, cancer of the nose and throat is 15 times higher, and cancer of the cervix is twice as high as the rest of the averages for the United States. And there are a number of things this can be attributed to, but my own feeling is that it's a very strong pattern of cigarette smoking, and also not only primary smoking, but secondary smoking, which is found in very tightly sealed homes. So you have...
You don't smoke, but you're inhaling the smoke of others.
Absolutely. Secondary smoking is when you are in a very closed room and a number of people are smoking, and even though you are not smoking, you are inhaling that smoke, and so you are susceptible to that environment also. And as we begin to seal up our homes and close things up even more, it gets worse. We also find that in native populations, especially Eskimo populations of Greenland and northern Canada and Alaska, that there are a number of salivary gland carcinomas, which are the saliva type of gland. And there is even a type of lesion called a malignant lymphoepithelial lesion called the Eskimona, which is only found in Eskimo people. So we begin to look at then not only cancer rates jumping way out of proportion and accidents going up, but also alcohol consumption. And the leading cause of accidental injuries and deaths in Alaska is related to alcohol. People say, why, ask us why perhaps it's more prevalent in some areas than others. And part of the reason, I would suggest, would be patterns of learning to consume alcohol. Since Alaska Natives are one of the few societies that never had any type of mind-altering drug, especially Alaska, the Eskimos, then we know that the introduction of alcohol came with a pattern that was developed by the traders that came through at first. And the traders came in and would drink to get drunk, whereas other people were perhaps taught in other societies that are consumed quite a bit of alcohol are taught to, you take perhaps in Germany beer with your meal. Not that there are no alcoholics in Germany, but the pattern was a familial type of pattern. The frightening thing that we are beginning to see in some of my work with the Alaska Native Health Board is that alcoholism is now becoming a generational problem. That the children of alcoholics are picking up the same pattern. And it's something that's going to take a while to correct.
You said an intergenerational problem. From, you mean
successive? It's being passed on, yes.
Yes, successive.
It's being passed on, yeah. Which is quite frightening. Another phenomena that we are looking at that's closely tied to alcohol and substance abuse is that of suicide. And suicide has always been described in the literature in anthropological papers of Margaret Lantis, for example, that suicide has always been accepted and that it has been even ritualized at some times by that society. We are finding,
sorry,
though,
by what society?
By a Native society, a number of Native societies, that Alaska Native societies,
Alaska,
I'm sorry, excuse me, Alaska Native society. And we are beginning, though, to see suicide take place as an individual act as opposed to a community type of endorsed act. And we're seeing it closely linked to alcohol and substance abuse. We are concerned about the growing rate of suicide, and we are in the process of hopefully this year establishing with the Alaska Native Health Board a type of group that will begin to examine a certain number of villages where this incidence is most high and to begin to look at not only causes but also treatment. And so what I am reporting are basically some trends that we are beginning to see, especially since the formation of the corporations, and that's why I'm mm-hmm. bringing a lot of these particular points up. Alaska is quite difficult to study in terms of all the villages of the 586,000 square miles, and as you know, just a few cities and 256 isolated villages and towns, many of them you probably have visited by now. And so we are beginning to examine what has been happening and what is some of the underlying causes of this. We know that a number of things can be prevented, but there is such a sociologic type of underbearing that needs to be examined at the same time. One of the areas that most concerns me is not only that a number of these diseases are an outward sign of something deeper, that we can certainly work on the outward effects of cancer and with the outward effects of depression, but the question is, where is it coming from? Why is it happening? We can cut out the cancer, but it would be like putting a Band-Aid on it. Unless we get to the root, we're not going to cure it. And my feeling, personally, from my travels and...
Excuse me.
Yes.
When Dr. Mall is finished, okay. Certainly, but we'll be here for a while.
Ask him about the cancer.
Well, we'll come back to that. I wanted to ask him about it, too.
Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. One of the causes of some of these serious trends that we're beginning to see that are serious in terms of self-destructive terms is that we are moving from a subsistence economy to a cash economy. And we are in this whirlwind of wanting to become modern. And we're not really looking very quickly at the price we're paying for it. I will once again recall the book that was written in 1930 by Peter Freuchen called Eskimo, which was later made into a movie and which you probably know my father starred in. And it was at that time Freuchen was trying to project that he began to see the changes in Alaska Natives, and especially in the Inuit, with the coming of non-Native contact, with European type of contact. And it was at that time a type of plea to Native people to look at yourself and to see what's happening. What is alcohol doing to our lives? And how is how are rifles and life changing going to change your lifestyle in general? One of the things that the movie portrayed and has traditionally been perceived in Inuit society is that the male image has always been that of hunter, provider, decision maker, and leader. And I see that role has been displaced by people trying to do good. We have seen government and social agencies come in and try to be so helpful and to do so much for Native people that they have, I feel, taken away from Native people the desire and the ability to do things for themselves. It began, I think, way back when the BIA would come up and say, you can't live in this sod house. You need BIA housing. So the government finally talked some people into it. And what happened? Well, the government has to work with lowest bidder. And I remember in Kotzebue that we got BIA housing that was prefabbed in California. And the wind would rush through, and people would pay a fortune in heating those houses. And other people in other agencies would come up and say, you need this, you need this, you can't live without this. And all of a sudden, what happened? Well, you know, the sod house was yours before, now you have to pay for it. You have, why go out and eat that native food? We'll put in a store for you, and you can eat this wonderful prepackaged preserved wonder from Chicago that cost perhaps 10 times more than something or that was even minimally available before. And all of a sudden people were beginning to get weaned from the subsistence economy to the cash economy. And all of a sudden, with the coming of television, gosh, think about television. We think of the psychologists that are paid very high sums of money to create a need for something in us that we don't need. Looking at selling cars and tires with beautiful women, the message being, buy this car, buy this tire, whatever, you will be quite successful, and so on. And if that type of message appeals to us, what is it going to do to people that are extremely trusting, that really have not been prepared for that type of message? And I feel that with television coming in, and with more media, and with more communications, and with more people traveling in and out of the village, the Western way of society is coming in. Not that it's bad, but it's coming in so quickly, and people are finding so many conflicts within their own life and wondering, should I eat this food because everybody else is eating this? Is it a problem? A lot of stress begins, we're beginning to see a lot of stress being created in the villages. No longer are people interested in the great hunter, in the great subsistence provider, I think. They are impressed by people that have lots of money. Wow, if you were taught by your parents that, well, just watching the movie of my father, I mean, in my own lifetime, looking at a man that took a dog sled from Candle down to Nome and really hadn't even seen an airplane, and all of a sudden in his own life went to Hollywood and made movies and came back. And to think that in my own generation people were taught by their parents what they thought was best for them. This is how to hunt, this is how to fish, this is how to be, this is how our custom was passed on. And then all of a sudden my generation has kids, and kids now don't have to leave to go to school, high school. They can, because of the Molly Hooch decision, they can go to school right in their backyard in their village. And what happens? They go to school, they are surrounded by computers, they're surrounded by the newest technology, they're surrounded by a Western type of education that is indeed training them to grow up in a Western society. What happens when they come home and step back into the 19th century?
Well, the early 20th.
Or the earlier 20th. Yeah. I mean, we are literally walking in and out of two worlds. And what happens to the parents that have to try to deal with these kids? Daddy, I can't work this problem out on my IBM PC. How do I do this algebra problem? And Daddy has been out learning how to be a good hunter and being the role head of his family. I'm worried about the shift of leadership in the family and the role of the father. I'm beginning to look at, why are so many women taking over going to school and taking over a number of leadership roles, and I don't know what's happening. How are people coping with this? I think in part this sense of frustration, this sense of uselessness is manifesting itself in some type of escape mechanism, including alcohol, including watching television for hours upon hours, and perhaps even looking at other ways to escape and to pass the time. It's a definite concern, and I think this has, in some ways, this sense of uselessness has prevailed. Now, there is a sense of hope, though. But before I go into that, I would also even mention a further step that in education, that Native's children are continually flying to the city. And there was a time in my own lifetime, only even 10 years ago, that I remember picking up kids from my own village in Buckland, bringing them over to my house, seeing them off the airplane, and spending 20 minutes trying to get them off the escalator because they were so thrilled with the escalator and the electric doors at the airport. Now, with television and them coming in, it's, you know, ho-hum, well, we're going to Anchorage. The question then is that too much responsibility, I think, has been taken away from Alaska Natives by government, by people trying to do well. And I think one of the greatest signs of hope that I have seen anywhere in the world of all the Alaska Native, Canadian Native, Siberian Eskimo, Greenland Inuit, everyone that I have seen, I think, is the spirit movement, which is in our own backyard in Kotzebue. And the spirit movement, as you are quite aware of, is basically saying, take responsibility for your life again. You've given away everything. You've given away what happens when you have a problem in a village. Well, I have a problem with my neighbor, I'll call the village policeman. I have a problem with my kid, I'll call the social worker. I have a problem with something else, I'll call some other agency. We're calling everyone but ourselves. We also have our elders. We're going back to saying, you know, the biological reality is that, as you know, biologically a person is at his or her prime to bring children into the world when they're about 18 or 19 years old, but they're mentally not ready to raise them. And that experience only comes with life. And we know that turning to our elders and going back to the people that should be telling us how to raise those people has brought not only a sense of continuity into the community, but also has brought the elders back to where they belong at a key pedestal of respect. So I think there are a number of problems that are manifesting themselves in terms of stress and depression and disease that I think are coming not only from resulting from the act and from all this infusion of money and from this great quest to be modern and to be Western and to so on, but I think that the key is going to be going back to our culture and saying, here our ancestors have survived for centuries. What is it that has brought them through all this? And survival, there's a new key to survival today. And survival is not in hunting anymore. Survival is in the ability to somehow make money in this Western world, if we're going to stay with this Western world. And of course the trend is to go back and say, that really wasn't that bad to eat greens or to hunt seal or to eat whale and so on. Here we're paying for this stuff with 40 preservatives and several types of food coloring that came from some factory in New York or Tennessee or whatever. We're paying premium rates to fly it up and barge it in, and we're surrounded with tremendous things. So it brings me to my second point, is that I think that the future of Alaska Natives is going to be in education. I think if we're going to work in this Western world, we're going to have to learn all about it. And I think that Alaska Natives are going to have to put demands on teachers, as well as teachers putting demands on us. And then it's only by looking at this Native world as well as the Western world that we can take the best out of both. There's no going back. There's no going back. We've gone too far. So I think the future in coping and depression and alcoholism and all this is looking at the problems and looking at where we are and figuring out where we go from here. In my work with Alaska Natives, I am the advisor for Alaska Native students at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Last year, we did a study called the Alaska Native Student Survey. And what we did was we took all the Alaska Native students at UAA and ACC, and well, enrolled now, there's about 84 Alaska Natives attending UAA, the University of Alaska Anchorage, and there are about 200 to 300 Alaska Natives registered at Anchorage Community College. And I'd like to very quickly leave the commission with some of the findings of what students have said, because it really is quite a major step for a student to leave a village and to go to attend the university, especially if you come from a village of around 200 or 300 people. All of a sudden, maybe you have that many people in one class. So all of a sudden, you're walking into a world that's 10 or 15 times bigger than your village, and with all the other things. And the other stress, of course, is people are saying, well, go be a doctor. Go be a lawyer. Go be a nurse. Go be something like that that you see on television. And then they come to us, and we obviously welcome them with open arms, and they leave the village, and people say, well, and they have a mindset that, well, he's gone, and when he comes back or she comes back, she'll be a doctor, no problem. And the person comes to school and all of a sudden not only hits the wall, as the expression goes in sports, the person comes along and not only has to adapt to what's going on in school, but also the cultural shock of living in the city, surviving in the city, dealing with checking accounts, dealing with multiple bureaucratic forms, and people that sometimes give the impression they don't really care in a quite an impersonal type of situation. So we took our students and we said, all right, what do you like about education? What don't you like? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? How can we change the system? How can we better prepare you to go back to your village? One of the frightening things in the AFN convention this past year, the youth convention, was that they brought in 100 youths from all over the state. None of them wanted to go back home. Wow. So, are we educating people too well? Are we educating them out of village life into this Western society? Are we realistically preparing people? What happens to the best of our people that just make the big decision to do something about this big change and decide to come to school? What are they going to do? Well, we asked them. In general, they said they like school.
These are the native students at the university.
Right. These are the native students at Anchorage Community College and the native students at University of Alaska Anchorage. What do you like about it? How can we do it better? How can we prepare you better? Well, a number of them have had some experience. 80% had some experience of coming to an urban area, either through a school trip or something, at least had seen the city. 20% did not. We found that in Anchorage, our largest village, that all native regions were represented. We found that the students had worked in a number of areas. Some had worked as perhaps a clerk of their village, city, or council, or whatever. 64% had been working for 1 year or longer before starting college. Most of them had done some type of service-related type of work, but it was, and so it might have been anything in an area that they could find work in. But many of them too were involved in fishing, in construction, and selling things. One of the big complaints that we found was that students did not feel that high school had prepared them for college. And we especially found this in people that came from villages. And one of the biggest problems I see that we're going to have in the future is inflated grades. I think that when we have a teacher in a village, that teacher is going to have to set some standards. Now, it's going to be two ways, though. We have to begin to motivate people to say, teacher, teach me the best you can and prepare me for college or whatever else I want to do, versus school boards and people that are saying, you've got a quota, you've got to graduate these people, get them out. There are students, there are teachers that are putting demands on native students, and natives are saying, no, we're not going to do it. What are you going to do about it? So it's, and then the other thing is that we're getting teachers into villages that are not culturally sensitive, not prepared. In my own village, where my family is, we had a teacher 2 years ago that was the principal of the school that was there for about 2 months and ran away. Took off for a weekend, left the state. People were not culturally prepared. And of course, the other thing of that I'm extremely concerned about is that just as Native people are not being prepared to cope with the Western world is not being prepared to cope with our own people. And the people that we are paying such incredible salaries for, and we're putting the lives and minds of our children in their hands, are not even prepared to think about how Natives think differently than non-Natives. How the Western society tends to think about